morning, and thank you all for being present here today for my talk titled Soil Health Evaluation of Flooded Rice Cultivation Compared to Other Agricultural Land Use Practices. I want to acknowledge my folks in my lab, Dr. Raju Katiwada, Salvador Galindo, and Jacob Asso. Just to give you a brief background about the region, we are located just south of Lake Okeechobee, not too far from here, approximately 280,000 hectares of organic soils, with about 80% of that used for growing sugarcane. The topography is fairly flat, shallow soils with an impermeable calcium carbonate lime rock underneath. The soils have been actively drained for almost the last century, where water is pumped through the system of the farms and the main canals. And then water from the Everglades agricultural area moves to the STAs, the stormwater treatment areas, and ultimately makes its way down to the Florida Everglades. To give you a little background of rice production in the Everglades agricultural area, rice was produced almost seven decades ago, way back in the 1950s. For a brief period of time, almost 2,000 acres of rice was grown in the region. However, there was the discovery of the white rice, white leaf virus, which was discovered in Latin America, and therefore there was a federal quarantine of rice production in the state of Florida. It took almost 27 years after that, and rice was reintroduced in the Everglades agricultural area in 77, after it was demonstrated that rice could be successfully incorporated into the sugarcane production cycle during the fallow period. So I'll explain this fallow period. Farming in the EAA runs in a four-year cycle, and you've got the 4 years on the left-hand side. For example, you would plant cane in the month of October. That would be your plant cane. It would go on for almost 12 months, maybe 13, even 14 months, and you would harvest it around November, December. That cane would then re-emerge as your first ratoon. It would once again run a cycle for almost a year, get harvested, and replanted as your second ratoon. And that would then go into your fourth year, and depending when that sugarcane is harvested, the growers would either plant some leafy greens, some vegetables, sweet corn, radishes, cabbage, celery, and then during between May through September is when that fields would be available for rice cultivation. Every year we have almost 55,000 acres of land that comes out of 3 years of sugarcane available for rice cultivation in the summer months. There have been some benefits of growing flooded rice in South Florida. They reduce the negative impacts of issues related to soil subsidence. Soil subsidence is a big issue for us in South Florida on our organic soils. We've been losing our organic soils at an alarming rate. So rice cultivation helps us with the nutrient depletion and with pest management. Soil insecticides for wireworm control rarely, if ever, needed when planting sugarcane after rice. So one thing to keep in mind is that sugarcane production is the main production cycle in South Florida, and rice kind of just takes this gap during the fallow period. So if you look at the trend of rice cultivation in South Florida, since 2008, the acreage as well as the yields have almost doubled. And as of just last summer, there was nearly 30,000 acres of land that went into rice during the summer month. Observing that trend, it made us want to think, well, since rice is going to increase as far as acreage is concerned, why not start thinking about what its effects are as far as soil quality is concerned? And that was the objective of this study, to evaluate soil health parameters before and after rice cultivation and compare them against two other common summer farming practices, which is fallow flooded fields and just fallow fields. So the experimental design comprised of 6 commercial fields, approximately 40 acres in size per farming practice. Soil samples were collected before and after rice cultivation. And if you look at the farming practices that we followed, these are all typical conventional farming practices. First one was a sugarcane field going into rice and then back into sugarcane. The second being cane going into a ratoon rice cycle and then back into sugarcane. A sugarcane field going into a fallow field over the summer, back into cane. Fourth is a sugarcane going into flooded fallow and then back into cane. Sweet corn going into rice and then into sugarcane, and a leafy lettuce field going into rice and then into sugarcane. The red arrows indicate when we went in there and sampled the soils. And just to make a mental note, the 6th farming practice, lettuce, rice, sugarcane, I haven't shown here. We don't have the results for that study as yet. So earlier this year, the Soil Health Institute endorsed 19 soil health parameters that would help accelerate agricultural transformation. All 19 of them have been listed here, and our lab is trying to get to establishing measuring all of those. However, for this study, we're only going to talk about the 9 that I have tick marked there, and those include organic carbon, pH, cation exchange capacity, nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, carbon mineralization, bulk density, and the water holding capacity. And that picture on the right is actually the organic muck soils of the region. Highly organic, upwards of 70, 75%, even 80% organic matter. So it's a very, very unique scenario that we are dealing with. Here are some of the results. The caption in the green at the bottom kind of describes the method. I won't be going too much into the detail. If you have any questions, I'll be glad to talk about it, but I'll just discuss the results. We've got pH here. On the x-axis, we've got the 5 planting treatments. You've got the sugarcane ratoon rice, the cane and single rice. You got sweet corn going into rice. You got cane in fallow, and you got cane in a flooded fallow field. Why is pH important for us? Well, as I mentioned, our bedrock is calcium carbonate. Our soils inherently have a high pH. And we know that ideally we would like our soils to be in the 5.5 to 6.5 range for those nutrients to be plant available. So we are looking at ways on how to bring that pH down. A lot of times growers actually add elemental sulfur just to bring the pH down for those soils. So we wanted to see what was the effect of rice cultivation. What we found was that it actually enhances the pH a little bit. So that is what we've seen, and that is something that the growers would be interested to know, whether they would like to add some sulfur in the following sugarcane planting period. When we looked at bulk density, we did see some significant difference with sugarcane going into rice. There was a significant reduction in bulk density, and there was a significant increase in bulk density when cane was just left as a flooded fallow. And that may be because of the presence of the root zone that rice cultivation provides to the field. So that extra organic matter in the soil allows for the reduction in the bulk density. Maximum water holding capacity, significant differences as far as increase in water holding capacity is concerned. And this is a good thing for the growers in the south, because rain during the dry winter season is very sporadic. If we know that our soils can hold on to that water a lot longer, that is a plus. In addition to that, some of the herbicides and insecticides that they might actually add prior to planting may also stay a lot longer in the field. Cation exchange capacity, the first two treatments, sugarcane with ratoon rice and sugarcane with rice, significant increase in CEC. Once again, this is a benefit when it comes to some of the pre-emergent insecticide and herbicides that growers may apply. It has the potential to stay in the system a lot longer and not leach out. Organic matter content, a bit of a moot point here because we are dealing with really high organic soils, but still, just to mention, it was significantly higher in sugarcane ratoon rice compared to the fallow period. But this is an interesting one, the active carbon, the mineralized carbon that is present in the system. Significant differences between the first three treatments and the significant increase. But what is interesting is that the fourth treatment, the sugarcane and fallow, had the highest effect. So what this means is when we leave our fields fallow during the hot, humid summer period, you are going to generate a lot of this active carbon, which has the potential to get mineralized really fast. So keeping your fields flooded or growing flooded rice will slow down that carbon mineralization process. And this is a very interesting find for us, and hopefully we can take this to the next level. This is just a summary of the nutrients that we analyzed: total phosphorus, malic 3, malic potassium, and TKN. No real trends that we have here to discuss. And having said that, as far as TKN goes, we still don't have our results from our post-sampling period. Hurricane Irma really did a number on us in South Florida, so we're still trying to play catch-up with it. So in summary, there was slight increase in soil pH from 7.35 to 7.83, resulting from rice cultivation. Bulk density was significantly reduced from 0.6 to 0.5, resulting from rice cultivation, whereas it increased from 0.54 to 0.62 under flooded fallow conditions. And that may be because of the presence of the root zone with rice cultivation. Water holding capacity increased significantly under all flooded land use practice compared to the fallow fields. CEC significantly increased when sugarcane fields were cultivated with rice and ratoon rice, nearly doubled. Small yet significant 3% increase of organic matter was observed when sugarcane fields were cultivated with ratoon rice, and almost 16 grams per kilogram of active carbon is being generated with fallow soils, whereas no more than 8 grams of active carbon under flooded. No significant trends were observed as far as the nutrients were concerned. And just to end my presentation, here is a visual of what soil subsidence and the loss of soil means to us in South Florida. That concrete post that you see is a 9-foot concrete post that was inserted in the ground in 1924. And over the years, you can see that post being exposed primarily because of soil loss due to oxidation and subsidence. So it is a near and present issue that we are dealing with, and hopefully the soil health work helps us understand this problem. Thank you, and I'll be glad to take any question, time permitting.
Thank you. Time for maybe one question.
Yes, sir.
Can you consider looking at how the rice is affecting available silicon?
The question is, have we looked at how rice affects available silicon? Silicon is actually added. Iron silicate is actually applied. It's the only fertilizer that is applied during rice cultivation in South Florida. No N, P, or K is added. So as far as silicon goes, we are adding silicon. And so the past study has shown there have been deficiencies, and therefore there is a need to apply silicon there. So it's being added at about 100 pound an acre rate, iron silicate.
Thank you.